From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The days of trying to shame Democrats for fighting for social and economic justice for working families, well, those days are over.
So I'm so thrilled to be here for many reasons, pay my respects to all of you, to bring a message from our Democrats in the Congress, but also to catch the spark of Illinois, to catch the spark of the heartland of America, where our victory in 2020 will spring from. Republicans had 137,000 ads, not dollars, ads, describing me as a San Francisco liberal, which I proudly am. It didn't work.
The good news is, I believe, as I said earlier, when you bring someone like Nancy Pelosi into your state, you've gotten pretty cocky in terms of your extreme nature, and you lose touch with those independents and moderates, in my opinion.
They are so out of touch, and they are going to hurt this state with what they're trying to propose with our Constitution, and also with their ultra-liberal, depressive, progressive, excessive, regressive, oppressive agenda. Oh, I forgot. The socialist agenda. That's not Illinois. That's not my Illinois. That's not your Illinois.
I want the media to know how proud we are of our president in Illinois.
That's the Illinois Republican Party Chairman Tim Schneider, just one of several GOP officials embracing President Trump at this week's State Fair Political Days. In there, we also heard from the U.S. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. She came to Springfield to headline one of the biggest events on the Illinois Democrats' political calendar. We'll talk about what they had to say, and we'll also hear about some questions surrounding the Chicago casino that's been proposed. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. And joining me in the studio is Charlie Wheeler. He's the outgoing director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime State House reporter and observer. In our Capitol Bureau is the IPR State House editor, Brian Mackey, and joining us for the first time this week, Chicago Tribune's new State House reporter, Jamie Monks. Jamie, welcome to State Week.
Thanks for having me.
And Brian, I'll start with you. Democrats, Republicans, both rallying this week around the State Fair, their annual events. Let's start with the Democrats. They brought in Nancy Pelosi. She can be a lightning rod for some controversy in some places, apparently not here at this event, this brunch that took place on Wednesday, which is known as Governor's Day at the State Fair.
Yeah, most people seem to be happy to have her, although I did talk to a couple of rank-and-file Democrats who sort of picked sides in this Pelosi versus the squad. They said they would like to hear her be more responsive to the concerns of progressives in the party on immigration issues, things like that. But Pelosi was here to celebrate the Illinois Democrats, and they were celebrating themselves. Governor Pritzker had a video compilation putting together what they view as their achievements, raising the minimum wage, legalizing and commercializing marijuana, passing an infrastructure plan. And Pelosi said she came not only to pay her respects to Illinois Democrats, but to catch the spark of the party, and says that the Democrats' victory they're going for next year in 2020 is going to come out of the heartland, as she put it.
Well, certainly Democrats have probably a lot to be happy about at this point. They hold all the statewide offices in the state of Illinois. They hold these extraordinary majorities in the Illinois General Assembly. And of course, you mentioned the governor's office and the two U.S. Senate seats. But is there any concern that was raised about, not getting a little too ahead of themselves? Any concerns that they could lose some of those gains?
You know, I didn't hear that explicitly from Democrats who were there. I heard Republicans, and we can come back to this later, saying that, boy, you bring in somebody as controversial as Nancy Pelosi, you're sort of you're wearing that liberal flag, on your sleeve, to mix metaphors. You're waving the flag proudly. And I guess that's the question is, has Illinois really turned as blue, as Democratic, as liberal as the Illinois Democrats seem to think it has? Or, have their recent election victories been a result of unique coincidences. You know, a very unpopular incumbent governor in Bruce Rauner, a wave election year that saw Democrats do better than they previously had and what had been districts drawn for Republicans. And there were hints that of Pelosi's unpopularity. I mean, she mentioned from the stage Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, who is again planning to challenge Congressman Rodney Davis in the 13th District in central Illinois. Dirksen-Londrigan was in the audience but did not appear with Pelosi. And when I tried to talk to her and another colleague tried to talk to her separately, she declined to even speak about Pelosi to reporters. So definitely there are some Democrats who view her as a liability and want to keep their distance.
Yeah, and Jamie, that seems to be, I think, indicative of the type of state we have here in Illinois. There are portions of the state where Nancy Pelosi would be welcomed with open arms. There may be other parts where more at arm's length, and the central Illinois might be one of those locations.
Absolutely. You know, Nancy Pelosi is historically a polarizing figure nationwide and in her own party. I will say one of the takeaways from Governor's Day was a message from her and many Illinois Democrats trying to paint a picture of unity for the party. And, you know, in a regionally diverse state, when you have some folks who are mounting an effort to try to kick Chicago out of Illinois or divide the state into pieces, they were really rallying behind, you know, the success that they had last year in the election, this year during the legislative session, and also mounting an effort to try to defeat Donald Trump and put a Democrat in the White House in 2020.
And last year, Charlie, Donald Trump's name came up a lot among Democrats, but so did Bruce Rauner. Right now, they're really focused on Trump, and they feel that's a winning message for them in Illinois.
Yeah, I expect that's something that, while Democrats may disagree on how progressive or how liberal they want the party to be, the national figures to be on things like health care and immigration, virtually every Democrat in the state would say, we got to get rid of Donald Trump. And in fact, that's one of the internal debates that you see reported. What's the best way to get rid of Trump? And the more progressive wing says, well, we have to come forth with these ideas for a new America, so to speak. And the others are saying, well, no, we don't want to go too far because we don't want to alienate the people in the middle to the extent that there are any. We want to get everybody to vote for our candidate, not necessarily because they love our candidate, but because they despise what President Trump has done to the country. So I think that's the key. And in Illinois, like Jamie said, we're real regionally diverse. Nancy Pelosi would be a hero in most parts of Chicago. You go in some downstate areas and she'd be met with tar and feathers. It's just the nature of Illinois being very, very red the further south you go, and being very, very blue in Chicago, and more importantly, in the suburbs. Because years ago, when I started at the Sun-Times, the suburbs were solidly Republican. That is no longer the case. As a matter of fact, there are only two members of the General Assembly, Republicans, from Cook County, districts that lie mostly within Cook County, which is just amazing if you look at it from the history point of view.
Brian,
I just want to add to something that Charlie and Jamie in particular were talking about earlier, which is this idea of unity. And I don't think it's just talk in Illinois. And I think it stands in contrast to some of the reporting we've seen about the congressional Democrats. I mean, there were some, you know, Pelosi drew a lot of attention when she told the New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd that AOC, you know, she's in a district where a glass of water could have been elected. I mean, it's pretty disparaging of the safe district Democrats who were, you know, fighting from that sort of progressive standpoint. Whereas Speaker Madigan seems to have brought the various factions of Illinois Democrats together, or at least, you know, help in the House, for example. Senate President Cullerton has always had a sort of small D democratic process for advancing legislation. But I talked to a number of people in the progressive caucus and some people not. And they say, you know, they feel heard by the speaker and their concerns are addressed and incorporated into legislation, which is something that people are not saying about Speaker Pelosi in Congress. Now, it's a different setup, and Illinois Democrats have a much more comfortable margin, so they can allow people to vote their district. You don't necessarily need everybody to hang together, but it is perhaps an interesting contrast between what's happening among Illinois Democrats, which are able to sort of unify the more moderate suburban voices with the more progressive urban ones, versus the Democrats nationally, where they are trying to protect a lot of seats that, as we said earlier, were taken from Republicans and could easily swing back the other way.
Well, the Republicans also rallied this week. They had a big event at the state fair. They brought in the U.S. House Minority Whip, Steve Scalise, and he gave sort of the big keynote address, I guess you would say, at the rally at the fairgrounds. And Jamie, you were there. What was his message to Illinois Republicans?
Well, during his speech, he really sought to contrast the Trump presidency with what he called failed liberal leadership under former President Barack Obama. There at the rally, there was a really big push to fight the machine, and a lot of support for President Trump out there yesterday.
Well, we mentioned a minute ago that, you know, the Nancy Pelosi was a bit polarizing, of course, to some people in the Democratic Party, that she could be, you know, viewed as a negative by many of them. Donald Trump, I think, has the same thing going on in the Republican Party. And if you're an Illinois Republican, maybe that traditional moderate, I guess you would call Illinois Republican, they may be having a difficult time pulling this all together as well, because they may not care for some of Donald Trump's policies.
I think that may be true, although there was not much evidence of that at the actual Republican Day events. You know, I remember I went back and looked up my report from 2016, and the Democrats were mocking the Republicans for not saying the name of their presidential nominee that year. I mean, literally, the Republicans did not say the word Trump at their event that year, whereas this year, as we heard in the tape at the top of the show, they want the media to know how proud they are of their president. You had Richard Porter, the Republican National Committeeman from Illinois, who is seems very much more in the Rauner, Mitt Romney sort of businessman Republican mold, but he was up there saying what a great job President Trump is doing. Any qualms Republicans might have about the president, they seem to be setting aside, but they don't really have to worry about a statewide campaign next year, except for attempting the difficult task of unseating Dick Durbin. But I mean, they're more focused on local district races. And I think they think there, as we said earlier, a lot of Illinois, particularly downstate, is trending more and more red, more and more conservative. And in those areas, being a Republican who supports Trump is an asset, not a liability.
And Charlie, your thoughts on this as well. Democrats may have their own problems internally trying to get everybody on the same page, but Republicans, don't they have the same problem?
They don't have the same problem with their base, I would say, because there is a hardcore base that absolutely loves President Trump. And whatever he says, whatever he does, that's the way they'll go. The difficulty is that in Illinois does not come anywhere near approaching majority. So unless you're a Republican candidate in a district, say in southern Illinois, that has mostly people who agree with the president, you're going to be hard-pressed. You're going to have to kind of, if you're in the suburbs, for example, you're going to have to kind of divorce yourself from the president on some of these issues to try and appeal to the block of moderate voters or the block of independent voters who are going to swing the election. And I see the parties, in a sense, becoming more polarized than they were, say, a generation ago. You don't find many Republicans who are of the same, what would you say, philosophical viewpoint as a guy like Jim Edgar or a guy like Jim Thompson. And so the polarization means that depending on where you're running geographically, you either have to kind of shy away from the president or you have to wholeheartedly embrace him.
Well, what you mentioned there about the base, I understand that point. But what I guess I was getting at was those people who maybe are a bit more in the middle, those who might swing to voting for a Democrat or Republican but might consider themselves more conservative or Republican in the traditional sense, voters. There was a story in the State Journal Register here in Springfield this week. I think Bernie Schoenberg, the columnist, had a story about the woman who sang the national anthem at the Democratic event had been a Republican before. Now she's actually singing in front of all these Democrats there, and she basically said it was Donald Trump that had driven her away from that party.
Yeah, and again, I don't think there's any doubt at all but what Illinois will vote for whoever the Democratic candidate is. You know, it could be Bozo the Clown, and they would vote for him, as opposed to voting for the presumptive Republican nominee, President Trump. But where the battle is going to be fought is in particularly congressional districts and the ones in the suburban area that Republicans lost to Democratic challengers, up in the DuPage County area, for example, with Representative Cass and Representative Underwood. They're going to face tough challenges, and the Republicans there can't embrace, I don't think, Donald Trump too closely, because they have to appeal to try and win back those formerly Republican voters who voted for Underwood and Kasten.
Let me move on here. We've got plenty of time to talk elections into next year, certainly. A consultant report released this week called into question how the possible Chicago casino, the one that's been outlined in legislation, and it called into question just how profitable that casino could be under the current tax structure. Jamie, you've been covering this. What does that report conclude?
Well, that feasibility study that was released earlier this week found that the sort of burdensome tax structure, there might be a challenge in attracting investors. And one of the other findings was that the five sites that have been potential sites that have been floated by the city might be unattractive because they wouldn't attract enough tourists necessarily. So I think that there are a lot of questions about where things go from here, and there have been suggestions of a trailer bill that lawmakers might take up this fall, but I think one of the lingering concerns is if this goes back into legislation, whether there's any sort of change that affects the other five sites across the state.
Charlie, some of that is, you've pointed this out before, you've thought that this casino should be located in a more visible location, I guess would be a way to say it, to tourists?
Yeah, not necessarily visible, but easily accessible, I would say. Oh. And what Mayor Lightfoot would like to do is use the casino as an economic development tool in areas that have fallen on hard times over the years. And virtually all the sites that she suggested are fairly far away from downtown. And if you're going to have somebody go down, say, to the south side, to the U.S. Steelworks, which has been abandoned for, Lord, I don't know how long, which has been proposed for all kinds of things, there's got to be maybe more than a casino. And I think what she had envisioned was some kind of a development that would include hotels, that would include shops, that would include entertainment venues, sort of like a mini Las Vegas in itself. And then the question is, are people going to want to take a cab down there? Are they going to want to drive down there if they have their own cars? Or would it be better to not worry so much about the geographic location where it could stir economic development, as finding a central location somewhere within the city? And one of the places that's been mentioned, I guess kind of tongue-in-cheek, is the Thompson Center, and convert that into a casino, which is within ready walking distance, I would guess, of, I don't know, 20,000 hotel rooms. And so, and it's surrounded by all kinds of other attractions. So you have the entertainment district kind of right there, and you put a casino in the middle of it, and that, I would suspect, would draw a lot more people, particularly people from out of town, because you don't want to have a casino where the people who are going to play it are all Chicago residents or all suburbanites. You want to get the tourist dollars. So in a sense, you're exporting your vice, if you will, and let other people from other states carry the freight. And to do that, you have to put it, in a central location.
Well, this is where it seems to me that politics and reality may divide a little bit. Brian, this is a situation where politically, and I've heard this for years, let's get a Chicago casino. Let's tax the heck out of it. Let's raise a lot of money. But when reality comes in, you've got to have people willing to invest in it. And they, of course, have to have a certain amount of profit that comes back. So maybe there's some middle ground that can be reached here.
Yeah, I think I like the way Greg Hines put it in Cranes, which is somebody's going to have to agree to take less money. And is that going to be the city? Is that going to be the state? Is that going to be the developers who come in? And, you know, there, as we've said, there are competing public policy demands. Should this be something that is primarily a revenue generator? I mean, the state and the city are hungry to have additional tax money coming in without directly raising income or property taxes on residents. On the other hand, you know, should it be primarily an economic development engine? And will it really be? You can understand the South Side, the Southworks locations, because that's pretty close to Indiana. Maybe cannibalize some of the Indiana casino business that's already out there. But as Charlie said, you put it downtown, then you're drawing more of the tourists in, people who are there for conventions. Although, was it Charlie or somebody who said they probably wouldn't, you know, the conventions wouldn't want it near McCormick Place because then people might not actually go to the conventions.
Yeah, they'd spend all their time in the casino.
Although that doesn't seem to have hurt Las Vegas's prospects as a convention city either. So this is just a sticky thing. And as we know, these gambling bills are Christmas trees, even though Pritzker explicitly said he didn't want a Christmas tree gambling bill earlier this year. He said he was looking for just legalizing sports betting, but what he got was a Christmas tree. And now it turns out, you know, some of the lights are flickering on that tree, and you got to figure out, can you get in there and just change one little light bulb, change two or three light bulbs, or are you going to end up stripping the whole tree and starting again, in which case I don't think we'll be rolling the dice in Chicago anytime soon.
Jamie, you mentioned that there is some concern if they reopen this legislation, what it could mean for these new casinos, I guess maybe even existing casinos, but the new ones, one's in Southern Illinois, one is in Rockford, are going to be in Danville was outlined in this, the suburbs as well. What are some of the concerns that you're hearing from people as far as, you know, what could be done to them if they, you know, is it that the tax structure would apply across the board, or would it be something else that has them concerned?
Well, I think that, you know, the concerns that I've heard of have just sort of been what if kind of, you know, general issues at this point. We don't really know what would happen if they go back into legislation on this. I did talk to a couple of lawmakers this week who said they don't think that anything will affect the other sites because the luxury tax that we're talking about in Chicago only applies to that site. But, you know, I think that in these other communities, people are really, you know, kind of chomping at the bit to get things going, get construction started as soon as possible, and are just concerned that, you know, this could be a hiccup in that process in some way.
And Brian, I guess it also opens the opportunity for anyone who didn't feel they got a good deal in the first time or maybe weren't even included in the first go around, if they do reopen legislation, to possibly be pushing and lobbying for some change there as well.
I hear between the lines of what you're saying, the push for the mysterious and elusive Springfield casino, possibly. But, you know, we've got so much gambling here already with all the storefront places and truck stops and everything else. I think that the law of inertia, momentum, or something like that. I think that doing more big things is not in the cards, so to speak, to again mix metaphors. But I think if something needs to be done just to get Chicago going, I mean, you already had bipartisan votes to get this thing through before. You hope that the reason would prevail, and you know, at least among the supporters of this, and that they could figure out a way to come together. I don't see more huge stuff being as easy to get done, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with the notion that we won't open the whole thing up because the people who were opposed in the first place are going to stay opposed. The people who voted thinking of their own communities, Danville, Rockford, Waukegan, the south suburbs, or down in, you know, along the, what is it, the Big Muddy River, where they're going to put it down in southern Illinois. They're not going to want to rock the boat. And I think the leadership of both in the Senate and the House of both parties is not going to want to open up the whole package again. They're going to look at this as a discrete situation that needs to be remedied. They'll hash out what the remedies might be. And then in the bill that will be passed in the fall session, it will just deal with the Chicago situation and leave everything else kind of status quo. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure they're already got bids out and they're starting work in some of the other places.
And Charlie, just with about a minute or so left here, I just wanted to, you know, mention as well, Chicago Casino, this has been talked about in theory for so long. I mean, getting it right is really the result here. They want the money, but they want it to be something that is all they expect it to be when it is all finished.
Yeah, and part of it is, if I'm not mistaken, the revenue is supposed to help pay the pension payment that Chicago faces. For me, there's a certain irony, because when the legislation allowing riverboats passed 30 years ago, then Mayor Daley said he didn't want a casino in Chicago. And I think his quote was along the lines that we don't want those little putt-putt boats. And I believe there was a restriction on having casinos in Cook County and a boat on Lake Michigan. Now, that has all changed, of course. But for somebody who watches this stuff over a long period of time, it's funny how attitudes change. But yeah, it's been discussed ad infinitum.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. And Brian, let's start with you.
This week, the governor announced part of the big capital infrastructure plan for Illinois. He announced members of an advisory council on expanding broadband access. The state is spending about $420 million to bring high-speed internet to areas of the state that don't have it. So if you are a listener of the State Week podcast, hang tight, and maybe you can download it a little bit faster in the future.
Jamie?
Well, this week, the governor oversaw the annual governor's sale of champions at the state fair, the livestock auction, and he got in on the bidding for the grand champion steer, but he was outbid by his wife, Illinois' First Lady M.K. Pritzker. So she ended up paying $75,000 for a roughly 1,340-pound steer named Lucius.
And hopefully she didn't actually buy it, like happened a few years ago, where they actually, if you remember, took ownership of it. So, Charlie, let's go to you.
Well, speaking of the state fair, the fair so far has been, I guess, a unmitigated success, in the sense that the revenue from grandstand tickets was roughly $2.2 billion, with still several days to go, eclipsing the $2.1 billion record set back in 2016, and the number of grandstand tickets sold, slightly more than 59,000, also broke the prior record. So far, the fair has been pretty successful.
All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks to our members of our broadcast, including Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Jamie Monks. You can get a podcast of our show. It's at nprillinois.org, and also find us through the NPR One app. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.